you're listening to Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson dig deeply. We probe the movies that affect us in some way, positive or negative. Be warned, there are spoilers coming. So sit back, get comfortable as we dig in and probe the movies, but not in a creepy way. Well, are you ready to talk about Murder by Death?
Oh, for the love of God, yes.
Okay. Welcome. This is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about Murder by Death, the 1976 film based on a Neil Simon play. Last week we talked about Clue. And Clue is just very charming and very dear to my heart. This is a whole different thing with a similar setting. And I love it equally, if not even more.
Yeah, I think the distinction can be made that Clue is very much... Clue is a movie, a murder mystery movie. This is a satire of a murder mystery.
Exactly.
So there's kind of a differentiation. And it's a Neil Simon play, and if you've seen any other Neil Simon, you know, Brighton Beach Memoirs and Broadway Bound and all of those. Neil Simon really is a genius. But Truman Capote.
Well, yeah. I mean,
the whole cast, of course, but Truman Capote, just like perfect.
Well, and you got Truman Capote, who is a personality but not an actor.
Right.
But then you have solid actors. I mean, everything from Peter Sellers, of course, to, you know, Maggie Smith and David Niven. I mean, it's an amazing cast. It's
Peter Falk and Eileen Brennan and, you know, James Coco and a very, very, very young James Cromwell.
Oh, my God. Is his first on-screen appearance is this movie.
Really?
Yeah. And he is so funny. In a way, I haven't seen him ever.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the roles I've seen him in. Yeah, this is because all of it's over-the-top kind of slapstick, you know.
Well, okay, James Cromwell is best known for Babe, the Babe movies. He played William Randolph Hearst in RKO 281.
Oh, yeah, he did. That's
he was in The Green Mile. He's been in American Horror Story. He was in L.A. Confidential. He was part of 6 Feet Under. I mean, he's been in a ton of stuff. He's just great, but usually he's a little more sinister or at least serious.
See, and, I also played, he was W in W with,
Josh Brolin?
Yeah, he was, H.W. Bush.
Oh, really?
Bush Sr.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
funny, yeah. Well, that's,
Yeah. I remember him from, he's in a bunch of movies, or a bunch of stuff. He also, for the Star Trek fans, he played, Zefram Cochrane, who was the creator of the warp drive in one of the Star Trek movies.
Oh, that's funny.
I think it was First Contact, I think is what he played. Yeah, Star Trek First Contact. He was, yeah. So it's in the IMDb. So I just looked it up. I cheated.
No, there's no cheating. This is all about, this is a fact-based podcast. By the way, let me put in disclaimers, spoiler, although we don't even need to talk about necessarily the ending, but unlike Clue is all about characters and the fun way they get to the end of the story. But this has an overarching satire. This has a point to it.
Well, this is just completely to make fun of and poke the finger in the nose at mystery writers, mystery novels, and mystery movies.
Oh, in a very specific way.
Oh, yeah. No, and it's very specific. You're right. It's very pointed, and which makes it a brilliant satire.
Oh, it's hilarious. And it's, you know, because the characters are a pastiche, like the character of Inspector Sidney Wang, played by Peter Sellers,
yeah,
is, of course, based on Charlie Chan.
Right.
And
they're all based on somebody.
Yeah, and so, but, you know, you could say, well, there is some, you know, I'm going to drop some, this is going to be a clip-heavy episode, just like Clue. But much for the same reason, is because you kind of have to hear how these lines are delivered and what the lines are to appreciate why we love this movie so much. Like the Madeleine Kahn thing in Clue with the flames. It's so funny. And you know that had to have been an ad-lib, totally.
Well, but I like how you did all kinds of drop-ins except for Madeleine Kahn singing.
Well, because I was feeling guilty how many drop-ins I did.
No, you should have just gone the distance.
Yeah, well,
I have to make just a tiny, tiny critique, small C. Your movie clip sounds like a lawnmower running.
Yeah, it's an old projector sound, but yeah,
it could be a lawnmower. What it's supposed to be, but yeah.
Well, and is it necessary? Do I even need any kind of intro outro to a clip like that?
I don't think so. You could try it without it. We could see.
Yeah, because I think it's kind of abrupt if I don't have something. There's got to be something that tells you that you're headed into that land, I think. I'm by the way, I'm up for all criticism because God knows we don't get any feedback from anybody.
Maybe a bicycle bell, you know, who knows?
A bicycle bell. I'm not sure how that signifies we're dropping in a film clip.
Oh, I don't know. It'd just be funny. Or you know, like a clown horn or something.
Maybe the sound of absurd. Maybe the sound of something dropping.
There you go.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's anyway. A beat drop. So, I don't know.
Oh, we could do it all in dubstep.
I'm so painfully white.
Anyway. Wait, dubstep is totally white.
I know. That's what I said.
Yeah. See, there's no black in dubstep at all. Well, except that the samples they use.
Well, the samples that they quote unquote borrow.
Yeah. Well, you know, hey, I get away with dropping in clips of the movie because we are reviewing or critiquing the movie.
Oh, and is that how we get away with it?
Yes, that is specifically available as fair use.
Good to know. I was paranoid. Yeah. So now you have allayed my fears.
No. If I used a bunch of music, because music is different. Although, if we were doing a review or criticism of the music, then that's okay. But like, I can't have I had first envisioned the blood rock song DOA being the beginning and end credits, but you can't use somebody else's song as your intro music. That's why I have the cheesy jazz royalty free music. Yeah. But it's also
incidentally, the Blood Rock from DOA was a song that was played by Rick Emerson on the Rick Emerson podcast and Rick Emerson radio program. He would play it anytime somebody was about to get on a plane.
Oh, yeah. It's great. It's a great song and creepy. It's fucking creepy. That's why, you know, that was the whole point. Every part of that song is creepy. And at one point, I was seriously thinking of writing to the Blood Rock guys about allowing me specifically to use their theme song.
Yeah.
But the problem is the song isn't owned by them. It's probably owned by, you know, it's through
MTA or Sony.
Yeah. Or it's through ASCAP or BMI. So I'd have to buy a license. And that's why you end up with crappy knockoff music in movies, because it's too complicated to get a license for this stuff. The music industry has, since some of the way they made money is taken away, the other ways have had to, you know, fill in the gaps. Anyhow.
So much trouble.
Yeah. Trouble coming every day. It's one of them. It's, I think, my favorite Frank Zappa song. I'd like to drop that in here, too, but unless we talk about it, I don't think I feel comfortable doing that. by the way, I have a total tangent. Oh, we've already tangented in a way. I have a total tangent to go. I need to recommend that people listen to the WTF podcast featuring the amazing Jonathan.
Oh, yeah.
It's really interesting. It's just really good stuff.
I like him as a magician, so.
Well, he talks a lot about that. He's also dying. He talks about that.
What?
Yeah, he's got a heart condition. But it's I have kind of stopped listening to WTF because I don't really like the interviews with the musicians, because now he's kind of run out of comedians. And he's done 500 episodes. I mean, I'm not criticizing the guy. He's one of the pioneers of podcasting. But I don't really listen to him as religiously as I used to. But definitely, the Amazing Jonathan one is great. Anyway, shall we go back to Murder by Death?
Yeah.
What we have here, here's the plot, is we have a group of detectives. Each is accompanied by a relative or associate. By the way, this whole thing... this whole tangent started when I was about to do a disclaimer about all plot summaries are provided by Wikipedia. Wikipedia. It's almost right. So, it's a group of detectives, each accompanied by a relative or associate, and they're invited to dinner and a murder by the mysterious Lionel Twain, which, if you're a fan of electric trains, Lionel makes electric trains, so Lionel Twain and his address, which is, it's 22 Twain.
Except that the actual address isn't that. If you watch the beginning of the movie, it's 22 Lola Avenue.
Oh, okay. But
the house is 22 Twain. So it was just kind of one of those funny throwbacks. So.
Oh, it has the 22, the house number on the house, and then the name as well.
Twain, right?
Yeah, so it's 22 Twain. Anyway, so you've got these five detectives and their associates who are invited to this party by Lionel Twain. So, you know, of course, the house is managed by a blind butler played expertly by Alec Guinness.
Not many people come to the manor these days. It's nice to hear guests again.
Thank you. You are?
Benson, ma'am.
Thank you, Benson.
No. Benson, ma'am. My name is Benson, ma'am.
Benson, ma'am?
Yes, sir. James, Benson, ma'am.
James, sir?
Yes, sir.
James, sir, Benson, ma'am?
Yes, sir.
Howard.
My father's name, sir.
What was your father's name?
Howard. Howard Benson, ma'am.
Your father was Howard Benson, ma'am.
Leave it be, dear. I've had enough.
Ah, here we are.
And a deaf-mute cook, played by Nancy Walker. And then here are the guests. We have Inspector Sidney Wang, Peter Sellers, and his adopted Japanese son, Willie.
I don't hear nothing. What do you hear?
Double negative and dog.
So it's a dog, so what?
If I'm not mistaken, dog belong to Mr. Dick Charleston.
Who's Dick Charleston?
I am, thank you. I say, you don't happen to have seen a little white...
Wang. A white Wang?
Good heavens, Sidney Wang. What are you doing in this godforsaken spot?
No doubt, same as you. Looking for a bridge that lead to home of host, Mr. Lionel Twain.
You too, huh? Must be important to invite two such eminent detectives.
Excuse, please, to introduce a Japanese son, Wei.
Hey.
Japanese, but I thought surely you...
Mrs. Wang and I could never have children. Willie adopted number three son.
My pleasure. Be careful on this road. It's treacherous.
Treacherous roads are like fresh mushroom. Must all hang up. Idiot, not finish mushroom story. You're an idiot.
Orson Welles was the first person considered for the role of Inspector Wang.
Oh,
but
wow.
He couldn't commit because of a play he was appearing in.
Also because I don't know that he could have pulled off the Chinaman. But
Well, Peter Sellers did in a great way. Nobody...
In the most racist, political incorrect way you couldn't do today.
Except that this is a pastiche and it's based on Charlie Chan, and Charlie Chan was almost never, I don't think he was ever played by an Asian actor. So that's part of the joke.
Yeah, except that they tried to make him, you know, they gave him makeup that gave him the eyes and the, you know, the eyebrows, and they tried to make him look a little more Asian.
Well, maybe. But the dialogue and everything, that was all pretty much.
The dialogue and the music and the robes and the, just, you know, a little offensive.
Oh, it would totally be offensive today.
Yeah.
But I think it's because we have thinner skins today.
Yeah, absolutely. And no, hilarious. I would go see this movie if it were made today. Although I cringe to think who would be in it, but...
Well, we'll talk about that, too. But the other thing about casting, Katharine Hepburn was meant to play a character called Dame Abigail Christian, who would be Agatha Christie. But she dropped out, and then... Then they changed that role to a Dame Abigail Christmas, and Estelle Winwood took that role. And then it was changed to Miss Jessica Marbles after Miss Marple's Agatha Christie character. And then we have Dick and Dora Charleston, who are based on Nick and Nora Charles from Dashiell Hammett's The Thin Man. And they're played by David Niven and Maggie Smith, who are fantastic.
Ringing. Dear, would you walk Mara in the other way? My leg tends to look like a tree in this fog.
What a godforsaken spot to get lost.
It's true, I saw a much better spot a few miles back.
Now, Myrna Loy was originally offered the part of Dora Charleston, But because she's the one who played Nora Charles in The Thin Man, she's declined and said it would have been ridiculous to have Myrna Loy doing Myrna Loy. And she also didn't want her ass pinched by David Niven.
I don't know why.
Well, maybe David Niven was something of a creep. And he did do some ass pinching.
Yes, he did.
Then we have Milo Perrier, who is played expertly by James Coco.
Yes, absolutely.
And, of course, he's based on Hercule Poirot.
Yes.
And he arrives in tow with his chauffeur, manservant, Marcel Cassette, played by James Cromwell.
Stop the car, we are here.
I know we are here, that's why I stopped the car.
Open my door.
You have chocolate on your face.
What?
The candy bar, it is all over your face.
Imbecile, that's my moustache.
Look it and see.
Wipe it off, my hands are sticky.
Hold still, please. Sloppy.
It's just great. So then we have Sam Diamond, who is a take on Dashiell Hammett's Sam Spade. I guess he could also be a takeoff of Raymond Chandler's...
He was kind of a melange of Sam Spade and Humphrey Bogart.
Well, yeah, exactly. He was doing a whole Humphrey Bogart impression. Oh, Philip Marlowe is who I'm thinking of. Raymond Chandler's Philip Marlowe. But they're basically, since Humphrey Bogart played them both at various times, it's all a Humphrey Bogart impression. Although, the lines that Peter Falk gets to say are definitely, it's a parody of the Dashiell Hammett, like, patter, or patois.
Yeah, the speech and the metering and the delivery are very, very, very much caricatures.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Of everybody, actually. And
yes.
Eileen Brennan does her usually perfect job, and she's Sam's long-suffering secretary, Tess Skeffington.
Here's the house now. What's the matter?
My feet are killing me. Why didn't you tell me we needed oil before I went back for the gas, Sam?
Because I gave you a $50 bill and the gas was only $5. Maybe you come back, maybe you wouldn't. I couldn't take that chance, Angel.
Don't you trust me, Sam?
Trust you? The last time that I trusted a dame was in Paris in 1940. She said she was going out to get a bottle of wine. 2 hours later, the Germans marched into France.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sam.
Sorry nothing. Give me my change.
And I think part of it, watching this, it was amazing to me to watch this movie again, because I actually watched it. So this is sad. I've now watched it 3 times in the last week.
Oh, it's worthy of it.
Oh yeah, no, I think this is another one of those I can always go to movies, because there's always it never drags. It, even though I know what's happening, it's funny to watch. But the striking thing about this was is how young, and granted, I know this was 1976, but like I think Brennan was so young in this movie, and you know Maggie Smith.
Oh yeah.
I was like, wow. But of everybody in this movie, there's only 3 people still alive.
Oh, okay. So who are the 3 still alive?
Maggie Smith.
Okay. Eileen Brennan's still alive, right?
No.
Oh, no.
Yeah, she passed away.
Okay, so Maggie Smith, because she's been in the Harry Potter movies and all Gosford Park, all sorts of stuff.
James Cromwell.
Yes, okay.
And would you care to guess?
Let's see.
The least likely
oh,
of anybody.
Estelle Winwood.
Oh, no. She died long. Oh, no. She was born in 1893.
Oh, was she? Get out of town. Oh, that's funny. Okay, so who is it?
Pat Narita.
Oh.
Or Richard Narita. Pat Narita.
No, not Pat Narita. Mr. Miyagi was not in the movie.
Richard Narita is still alive.
Yeah. And he actually did a good job, too, as number 3.
Oh,
son.
Yeah. No, you felt bad for him. I felt bad for him anyway.
Oh, well, let me tell you, this movie, I can put the lesson learned, is that it's not great to be the sidekick of a famous detective.
There's
tons of scut work.
No, you have all the good solutions and get none of the credit.
Oh, and you have to do all the heavy lifting.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you actually you were the one who was all put in danger the entire time.
Yeah. No, the great line is like, why do I have to clean up after everything? You know, because your mother's not here.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Then we have Jessica Marbles, who's played by Elsa Lanchester, and she is basically Miss Marple, and she's a hardy Englishwoman with a frail, seemingly senile companion who is Nurse Miss Withers.
Ah, Miss Marble, so we finally meet. How admire you ever since I was tiny little detective.
Thank you, Mr. Wang. I am Jessica Marbles. This is Miss Withers, my nurse. She's been with me 52 years. I have to take care of the poor dear now. Are you all right, Miss Withers? Mm. Do you want your medicine now?
No.
Is real. I don't have enough of the Miss Withers lines to just drop in, but it's very funny. It just pops in. She's like, murder poo?
Yeah.
Yes, we have a lovely murder.
No, she giggles and she does inappropriate things and, the greatest, one of the greatest zeniths of this movie is when the nurse screams, you know, Jesus H. Christ.
Oh, yeah. Well, and apparently in real life, these two actresses didn't like one another.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they would basically be sniping at each other throughout the production.
That surprised me, because this is such a fun movie. I don't know why you would...
I think on a personal level, they just didn't like each other.
Yeah, but why would you... I don't know. I mean, I have no reason to doubt you, but it's like, why would you go into a movie like this and not have fun doing it? But then again, you know, who knows?
It's a job, remember.
No, I understand.
Yeah. So, anyway, and, you know, I forget because I think of Alec Guinness primarily as Obi-Wan Kenobi, which is unfair because he is a fantastic actor. I mean, he's not a goddamn American treasure because he's
he's British.
Yeah, he's a knight of the British Empire as knighted by the Queen, for God's sake. And there are a ton of blind jokes in this movie. And at first I thought I was a little bit irritated because they do a lot of really silly blind jokes. And I thought that was going to be like the equivalent of the dog poop, but yeah, a little overdone. But it worked out rather well.
Yeah.
Especially at the end where, spoiler, he's not blind.
Whatever you do, you don't let him park the car.
And then, of course...
It's because Maggie Smith had some of the best one-liners in the whole movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, you know, Eileen Brennan has some of the best one-liners. The only, you know, nobody has as good one-liners, of course, as Sidney Wang. Because he's got all those little bits of Chinese wisdom.
The fortune cookie wisdom.
Exactly.
But Truman Capote certainly played the angry old man very well.
Oh, and he, you know, he was just doing his Truman Capote thing.
Yeah, no, he was very much himself.
Exactly. Which is, you know, who you want it to be. I mean, you know, you wanted him to play himself.
I trust you've all been made comfortable.
Comfortable, Mr. Twain? Do you call poisoned wine and near decapitation comfortable?
No. I call it inspiration.
You still have not explained the various mechanical and culinary attempts on our lives, Monsieur Twain.
Merely games, Monsieur Perrier. Pitting wits with you, so to speak.
You pit your wits with me, little man, and you won't have your wits to pit with. Know what I mean?
Sam, you're spitting on the nurse.
Sorry, old lady. Crazy broad should be in bed.
Monsieur Twain, we have been here nearly 4 hours, and there has not been a hint of a hot dinner or a cold corpse. I must therefore bid you adieu.
I bid one adieu as well.
No one is leaving this house.
What meaning of this, Mr. Twain?
I will tell you, Mr. Wang, if you can tell me why a man who possesses one of the most brilliant minds of this century can't say his prepositions or articles. The, Mr. Wang, what is the meaning of this?
That's what I said. What meaning of this?
The meaning of this is that I have decided to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that the greatest living criminologist in the world is sitting at this table, and you are all looking at him. No, don't look at each other. Look at me. I'm the greatest. I'm number one.
To me, you look like number two. Know what I mean?
What does he mean, Miss Skeffington?
I'll tell you later. It's disgusting.
In all your various adventures, messieurs and madames, not one of you has ever had an unsolved murder. Your reputations exist on this single fact. But what would the world say if the five greatest living detectives found themselves trapped in a country house at the weekend, shut off from the outside world, only to discover a dead body on the floor, stabbed 12 times in the back with a butcher's knife, and not one of you able to solve the crime?
You mean murder?
Dora, please, we're talking shop.
Yes, murder, Mrs. Charleston. On the stroke of midnight, someone in this house is going to be viciously murdered.
Left out one small detail, Mr. Twain. Who victim?
Is the. Who is the victim? That drives me crazy.
Sounds like a short ride to me.
Does it, Mr. Diamond? Well, we shall see who is sane and who is crazy around here. Mr. Wang, the victim is here at this very table at this very moment. And so, too, ladies and gentlemen, is the murderer.
Murder poo? Yes, dear. We're going to have a lovely murder poo.
Why don't you push your wheelchair down the driveway? We got business here. You say you know who's going to get it?
Intimately.
And you know how the crime is to be committed?
Definitely.
And exactly what time murder to take place?
The murder. Precisely.
And, of course, this has all these twists of an ending. And, okay, should I drop in the end of this movie? Because Truman Capote has a really nice speech at the end about how that for years they've been throwing in characters at the last minute and doing trickery, and he was going to, you know, undo all that. So do you think it's unfair to throw in a clip of his rant at the end?
I think you just need to you need to have like a sound effect that's like, this is a spoiler alert right here.
Spoiler alert.
Now, my dear colleagues, what you all seem to overlook is the most simple and direct solution. That I am indeed
Lionel Twain. You've all been so clever for so long. You've forgotten to be humble. You've tricked and fooled your readers for years. You've tortured us all with surprise endings that made no sense. You've introduced characters in the last five pages that were never in the book before. You've withheld clues and information that made it impossible for us to guess who did it. But now, the tables are turned. Millions of angry mystery readers are now getting their revenge. When the world learns I've outsmarted you, they'll be selling your $1.95 books for 12 cents. It's checkout time, ladies and gentlemen. I have your bills ready.
Oh, by the way, Drew's going to weigh in on this movie, too. When he found out we were doing it, he said, I don't want to be a carpetbagger, but I've watched this movie half a dozen times just because of Jason's love for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so he's got some fun stuff to say, too, apparently.
Awesome. By the way, Estelle Winwood was 101 when she died.
Oh, my goodness. Which was when?
Yeah, 84.
Oh, wow.
84. Well, she would have been 90.
Yeah, so.
92.
Yeah, that's amazing.
She looks good for 92.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Apparently in the TV movie, or the TV presentation of the show, there was one additional scene.
Yeah, I was trying to remember, because I've seen the TV movie, and I'm trying to remember what the additional scene was.
Oh, I'll tell you.
Oh, good.
The additional scene is Keith McConnell playing Sherlock Holmes and Richard Peele playing Dr. Watson, and they're arriving as the other people are leaving.
Look, Pop, there's someone in a car waving at us.
I say, old boy, could you possibly... Hello, it's Mr. Sidney Wang.
Mr. Wang, good evening. So we finally meet. Can be of assistance.
Yes, we were looking for the Lionel Twain home. We've been invited to dinner.
Lionel Twain? You don't want to... Number 22, Lorna Lane, just past bridge.
Oh, ever so much obliged.
I don't get it, Pop. Why didn't you tell them it was all a ripoff?
Let the idiots find out for themselves. Drive, please.
Not so funny.
Oh, I thought it was kind of funny that, you know, Dr. Watson and Sherlock Holmes show up at the end.
I remember the scene. I remember having seen this on TV.
Anyway, so the end of this movie is, it's all been a trick. You know, the final line pretty much is when Willie Wang says, "So, Pop, I don't understand. Was anybody murdered?" And Sidney Wang says, "Yes, killed good weekend." Which is, you know, it's great. And again, it's because these characters are so rich. I definitely recommend anybody see it. And the details are great. I mean, the opening credits, it's all Charles Adams from Adams Family fame illustrating the characters. And they're great. And all the little eyes move, except for Peter Falk, which is hilarious, because Peter Falk has a disco eye.
Well, and didn't Alec Guinness's eyes not move?
Well, Alec Guinness just had the white eyes, no pupils.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Murder by Death first. Well, actually, what is your history with this movie?
So Murder by Death was a movie that I was introduced to by Jason. So in my mind, it's always been like Jason's movie because he loved it so much. And, you know, we had it on a bootleg video. And he watched it all the time, which meant I watched it all the time with him. So whether I liked it at first, I ended up liking it quite a bit. But I was exposed to it so young that I didn't really comprehend that it was a satire, because I didn't have any of the history of those types of movies or those types of characters to bring to it. So that movie is actually what informed me about those types of mysteries and sort of locked room mysteries. So as I grew older and started seeing some of the movies that it was satirizing, it was sort of backwards. You know, instead of watching Murder by Death and thinking, oh, they're making fun of this trope, I would watch the original movies and be like, oh, that's just like in Murder by Death. So it sort of subverted what I think the relationship is supposed to be with those types of movies.
But it works, though.
It works. I mean, just on its own, without having any history of those types of movies, it's a great movie, and I loved it. It was hilarious. It was creepy. It was interesting. At times, it was terrifying for a little kid. Now, I know the talking moose is supposed to be funny, but if you don't really understand what's going on, it was really horrifying.
Well, especially when the moose talks with Truman Capote's voice.
Yeah, and Truman Capote himself was just weird and creepy.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, what about Alec Guinness?
Yeah, so there were two things that sort of rocked the foundation of how I came to understand the world as I was growing up, and they were both related to Star Wars. One is after probably watching the first three Star Wars movies, you know, combined maybe, you know, 40 times, and watching Murder by Death, you know, at least 15 to 20 times, when I was finally old enough to realize that Benson Mum was Obi-Wan Kenobi, it just shook me to my core. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, that's funny.
It was sort of very similar to when I realized that Yoda and Miss Piggy were the same voice. It broke my mind.
He's a fantastic actor. So the fact that we know him as Benson Mum and Obi-Wan is crazy.
Yeah, and Murder by Death was my introduction to pretty much every actor in this movie. So it's my main relationship with Peter Sellers and David Niven, not the maid.
she was in a bunch of commercials when I was growing up. So, but yeah, you mentioned James Cromwell from Babe.
Yeah.
In your podcast with Jason. So yeah, every time I see him, I think of Murder by Death.
See, that's funny because I had forgotten he was in that. And it was so fantastic to watch him as his first screen appearance, and he's so different than you see him now.
Yeah, he was Jack Bauer's dad.
Yeah, so you don't really see, I mean, in his French accent, it's so funny.
Oh, it's so terrible.
Well, yeah, well, what about, what do you think now as an adult about Peter Sellers' portrayal of Inspector Sidney Wang?
Amazing.
Isn't it?
It's amazing that that could ever happen.
Well, I was trying to explain to Jason who said, yeah, it was the most racist thing he'd seen. But it's like, yeah, except that it's a pastiche of the real racist thing was Charlie Chan. Now, granted, if this is your first exposure to this kind of thing, then yeah, it's going to be, you know, super racist. But he has all the best lines in the movie.
Oh, yeah, he certainly does.
Peter Falk, the whole Peter Falk and Eileen Brennan. I'd forgotten because, you know, Peter Falk's like head is the main one on the video box cover, and everybody else gets a little bubble with their picture in it, but his like head is the main one.
Oh, that's funny. He was amazingly hilariously sexist, right?
Oh, and also racist at the end.
I suggest we get down to business and sort the facts. It is now 12:30 Sunday morning. Doors and windows will automatically open at dawn, and one of us here will be $1 million richer. And one of us will be going to the gas chamber to be hung.
One, Monsieur Perrier. Why not two? We all have associates.
Why not four or six or eight? I don't trust any of you. Maybe I'm just a patsy being set up to take the fall, but I'm not falling for any of you, understand?
Not even me, Sam.
Why don't you fall in love with the Jap kid and get off my back?
Can we get back to case, please? Time is late and my eyes are getting tired.
I thought they always looked like that.
Knock it off, Sam.
I apologize. This case is getting on my nerves. I'm sorry, Slandy.
But yeah, super sexist. And she was just so, like, the long-suffering secretary.
Mm-hmm.
She was just great, you know, constantly pining to be in love, with, or to profess her love for Sam, who didn't really give her the time of day.
And I think I saw somewhere that the Sherlock scene was actually not in the original movie.
Yeah, it's not in the version that when I got mine from Netflix, it's not on that DVD.
So Jason must have recorded it off of TV.
Yeah, I think he probably did.
Because
I totally remember the scene.
Yeah, absolutely. It was there every time.
Yeah.
Yeah, with Clue, I thought the way they did the sort of multiple possibility endings was pretty innovative for the time and rather clever. But the ending of Murder by Death is just hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
It's straight out funny. Have you ever seen the original Casino Royale?
I have not. It's on my Netflix queue, but I have not seen it.
I remember starting to watch it. I think I rented it, or maybe got it from Netflix early on in my Netflix subscription. And I got it because, in my mind, it was supposed to be a Murder by Death version of the James Bond story. But it's one of the few movies I just had to turn off because it wasn't what I wanted or expected at all. It was way more slapsticky than I was expecting.
Well, and all the Pink Panther movies, you know, even though I love Dr. Strangelove, I'm not a huge fan of the Pink Panther movies.
I don't know that I've ever sat through one of them.
Well, that's what it would be for me, is sitting through.
Yeah.
Anything else on Murder by Death?
No, but I was really happy that you did mention Babe and Babe, Baker City when you're talking to Jason. And I don't know if he thought you were joking about Babe, Baker City being a good movie, but I think it's a really good movie.
Yeah, I haven't watched it in a while, but I thought it was always a good movie. The original Babe was okay. It was fine.
Yeah, it was good. But yeah, Baker City was just so weird, and it was great. It had, there was one scene in that movie that broke my heart twice. Like, the span of 42 seconds. It was the dog that had the back legs that didn't work. So he was in the wheelchair. So he was hooked up to this harness that had wheels. So he'd walk around on his front legs, dragging the wheels. And there's a scene where Yeah, I haven't seen this movie probably in over 10 years, but it still resonates with me. There's a scene, I don't remember why, but somebody kidnapped Babe out from the street, and they kidnapped Babe into a car, and his animal friends from the hotel tried to intervene, and one of the kidnappers kicked the dog back into the alley, and then it cut to a scene of that dog running through the, like, in slow motion, like melodramatic music, running through this like field of flowers, like in heaven.
Oh no!
They just killed the dog.
Oh my god!
And he like looked back at his legs and like had like a big dog smile on his face, and it was heartbreaking. And then they cut back to him waking up in the alley, and then like looking back at his wheels again, and then like awkwardly like clambering back up, and that was even more heartbreaking.
Oh man, I'll have to revisit Pig in the City.
Yeah, it's been so long that I may have embellished the memory, but it affected me that strongly.
Well, again, you know, okay, maybe I shouldn't go watch it. Maybe it's a Nightbreed.
Maybe.
I was thinking, do you read a lot of detective novels these days, or have you read a lot of detective novels recently?
It depends on what you're defining as a detective novel.
Well,
I have been on Audible because I don't read much anymore. I do.
Yeah, no, I don't read anymore either. I listen to audiobooks voraciously.
Yeah, no, I've listened to audiobooks a lot too. The detective novels that I've been downloading from Audible have been the James Patterson novels. But specific Patterson novels. It's all been
my real question is.
Yeah.
Of the modern detectives, who would you invite to this party?
Well, that presumes who's a modern detective. I mean, I don't know.
Just of the things you've read. Now, my wife actually reads a lot of the thrillers. So I compared notes with her and I came up with a list. But I'm just curious if you have a list of your own.
I wouldn't have enough read to be able to make a list.
Well, here's who I'm thinking of.
I mean, because I'm the Patterson novels that I read are the Michael Bennett series, and then Vince Flynn.
Oh, how are the Vince Flynn books?
The Mitch Rapp series are what I have.
Yeah, that's the assassin
the
guy.
Yeah, I have every one of them, and I adore them.
Oh, fantastic.
They're fantastic.
So it's a thriller, but he's not necessarily a detective.
He's not a detective. He's a spy. So he's a spy detective. But I think even Derek liked those stories when I was listening to them.
Well, maybe so, I will investigate, because that's a good recommendation if you like them.
Well, and there's a bunch of them. There's like a dozen of the Mitch Rapp.
Would you go just from the beginning, or are there ones that...
Yes. Go from the beginning.
Oh, okay.
Because there is a definitive arc. There is a story arc to it.
Well, here's a question. Have you read any of the David Rosenfeld books? You would recognize at least his detective's name is Andy Carpenter. And among other things, the distinctive feature of Andy Carpenter is that he's like a private detective. Well, I think he's an attorney because he won some sort of big case and took his big bunch of money, and his big bunch of money helps him plot-wise because he doesn't have to worry too much about how he's going to get stuff. You know, it's easy to weave things in when you have not unlimited amount of money, but a certain amount of money. You don't have to worry too much about that. Like, who are his other clients? He doesn't have to have very many clients. And second thing is that he runs a rescue shelter for dogs. And his dog is like a main character in his story. And he also has a friend of his that he plays a musical quote game with, which is pretty fun.
Huh.
But like all of his first books, at least, are like dog puns.
Huh.
The titles. But I'd really highly recommend it. They're fun.
Oh.
But I would suggest I would invite Andy Carpenter to this party. I would also invite Harry Bosch and Alex Cross.
Alex Cross. Yeah, this is the other Patterson that I read.
Yeah. How about Stephanie Plum?
I don't know who that is.
That's from, she's the bounty hunter. Anyway, okay. If you don't know, you don't know. That's fine. How about Adrian Monk? Wouldn't Monk be great?
I never liked that show.
Really? I'm just a big fan of Tony Shalhoub.
I liked Tony Shalhoub on Wings. But Monk, I don't know. Maybe his performance of OCD was too real, but then when they changed the female character after like the second season, I was out.
Yeah, well, they changed the tone as well. It really became Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah, and so I was like,
But perfect for this kind of movie, though, because he's such a distinctive character.
Yeah.
But I was also thinking of, how about Veronica Mars?
I've never seen Veronica Mars.
Oh, me either, but it's popular.
But then you know, also, who of the CSI, you know, who from the CSI group would you want?
Well, that's the thing, is I think there are too many of them.
Because I don't know. I would just take Gil Grissom.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. Yeah. You wouldn't want to have David Caruso on your set.
No.
There's a funny story with Malcolm McDowell appeared on CSI Miami, and David Caruso was, apparently he's kind of a jerk. And so Malcolm,
surprise!
Yeah, well, and Malcolm McDowell was in this scene, and it was basically, he was supposed to be on the phone, and then David Caruso came in, did the sunglass thing, and they started their conversation. Yeah. Well, Malcolm McDowell just never got off the phone. And David Caruso just got angrier and angrier and angrier. And Malcolm McDowell was like, yeah, you're a jackass. I will do this all day long.
Good for him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. Nice to have that kind of weight behind you, you know?
The judges would also accept Castle.
Okay, yeah. I have never seen that or read it, but I've heard it's popular. I was thinking how about Harry Dresden? Detective Beckett? From where?
Yeah, Beckett's Castle's counterpart.
Oh, okay. How about...
She's the female lead of Castle. So.
Well, and that would be good for a duo. Because, you know, like, I don't know if Harry Bosch would take anybody with him. Or
Castle's really the sidekick. Beckett's the detective.
Well, that's cool. How about Jack Reacher? He's more of a assassin guy than detective too, right?
Yeah.
I think. I mean, maybe assassin's a strong word, but... And I was thinking also Aloysius Pendergrass from the Preston and Child books, because he's a very distinctive... He's an FBI agent, but he's still a very distinctive character. Huh, kind of a Niles Crane kind of character. How about Kay Scarpetta? Patricia Cornwell? She's a medical examiner.
What about Clary Starling?
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Or even better, how about Will Graham?
Yeah, but then you have to be careful because, you know, Nils Petersen played both.
Yeah.
Gil Grissom and so.
How about this? How about Lisbeth Salander from The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
From The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
Yeah, that she would be somebody who'd be so fun to have in that mix.
Oh, yeah. Except she would kill them all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she'd be a prime suspect the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, but she would look good doing it.
Yeah, or a little sick.
Well, she would look good for her.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She'd be very stylish.
She would always look like she needed a sandwich.
Well, a sandwich and a hug. Because bad things were done to her. Have you seen those movies?
I've seen the American Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
I would recommend the other ones.
I have the Swedish version in the queue on Netflix, but I know that it's darker than the American version, and I just haven't gotten the gusto to watch it yet. It's there. It needs to be a strong day, though.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's not. Yeah. It's not a happy story.
Well, the American version wasn't a real happy story either, in my opinion.
No. It's the same story. I mean, they basically do the same thing.
Yeah.
It's just that she plays, I don't know, I really like her performance. Naomi Rapace. She
the American version?
No, that was Rooney Mara.
Yeah.
Naomi Rapace was the one in the Swedish version. And she was really, really good. But she plays, I mean, she plays Broken really well. And that's sadly what the part is. I mean, Salander may be a survivor, but she is broken.
Oh, yeah, damaged.
Yeah, which makes her for a good character. You know, you wouldn't want to have her as a long-term guest in your house, though.
No, I wouldn't want her as a guest in my house.
Yeah.
Unsupervised. So, but, the American version of the movie... We are way off topic now.
No, it's okay. The thing about both this and Clue is that the talk about the actual movie doesn't need to take very long because I'm going to drop clips in to give everybody an idea and to relive the majesty and magnificence of the movie. But it's just, we just recommend you watch it because it's fantastic. And this whole podcast is about tangents anyway.
Travis and I went and saw The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo in movie theater. I think it was out around Christmas. So, but he and I went, and it was a very cold morning here, and we went out, and it was fantastic. But I remember that it's a long movie, and we sat through it, and I was just like, I didn't want to get up. And I had to pee like 2/3 of the way in, and I'm like, I didn't want to get up. I didn't want to miss it. So I just painfully sat through the rest of the movie. And Travis confessed later, he's like, I did the same thing. Because I think we were just afraid to miss anything.
Well, yeah, because there's a lot going on.
Well, and there's some very shocking, jarring parts to the movie. And I went into it with no knowledge.
Yeah, that's not necessarily the best place to be.
Because
it is.
No, but I'm better off than one of Travis's, my mutual friends, that went with his parents.
Yes, don't take your parents.
Because that's a really uncomfortable car ride home.
Yeah. Because even though there's a certain amount of revenge, it's not a happy ending.
It's very graphic too.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, the Swedish version is super graphic also.
Yeah, but the movie, I mean, shockingly, it was shockingly graphic for what I've seen in an American movie.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I'm not complaining. It was well done, I think.
Well, and just frankly, the second movie is not as good as the first, and the third movie is not as good as either of the other two. And I think Stieg Larsson died between the second and third books. I mean, he was halfway done with the third book.
Yeah, I read that. And in Sweden, and I've only read this in a few articles, so if we have listeners in Sweden, feel free to correct me. But I am told, or I get the impression from news articles that I have read, that they feel that these are very pulpy, not very worthwhile books.
Oh, yeah. No, they are kind of, pulpy books. And also... The original title, the title in Swedish of the novel, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, it's actually called The Man Who Hated Women, which is a whole different, you know what you're getting into a little more. Because The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, if you're looking at it like a noir thing, you'd think, oh, how mysterious, how sensual. But mysterious, yes, sensual, graphic, difficult to watch. Bad things happen to the girl with the dragon tattoo. I'll just warn people.
Yeah. Amazing. I mean, amazing. I mean, the American actress did an amazing job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Rooney Mara is good. And
I didn't recognize her.
Oh, no. No, it's startling.
Yeah, but good for her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And David Fincher is a great actor. David Fincher is a great director. So they were in good hands with that.
Well, and, I assume that he pulled her because, he produced a Social Network, or The Social Network or whatever it was.
And she plays the girlfriend, is that right?
Yeah, she plays his girlfriend in the beginning of the movie.
Well, and you know who her sister is, right?
No.
Doesn't she play in The House of Cards? Isn't she the reporter girl?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, and of course, not to come full circle, Robin Wright Penn. She was Daniel Craig's girlfriend, wife thing in...
Oh, okay. See, I haven't seen that movie very recently, and it didn't have the impression upon me that the first one did because it was so shocking. Because it was so shocking, you're just watching a remake and you've already seen the original, so you kind of know what's coming.
Yeah.
And you're comparing, which isn't really fair.
Speaking of House of Cards, have you started season two?
No.
Oh, for the love of God, man! At least watch episode one. Because I have to have some commiseration.
Okay, all right.
I beg of you.
Okay, I will watch it before next week. I'll watch episode one.
to quote the nurse, Jesus H. Christ. Oh God! It's a great show. House of Cards is a great show. Absolutely, is a great show. But oh my God!
But it's also something that I have to be in a certain mood to watch. Also,
maybe I tend to binge. I'm trying not to binge on it. I've limited myself to 2 episodes per 4 days because otherwise I will just burn through it.
Well, I don't mind binging on it. It's just that I have to, because it's a movie. It's because it's a show that's so well done. I want to be able to pay attention to it.
Yeah, me too.
So, you know, just like the movies I watch for the podcast, I have to be in a setting where I can pay attention. And, of course, with the podcast, I'm in a setting where I can pay attention and take notes, which is not always as easy to find that place. I feel for movie reviewers who have to actually go to a theater because, you know, jotting notes in the theater would be at least disruptive.
Well, maybe. Yeah. I think if you did it as a career, you'd be creative.
Well, and if you did it, you know, if you were someplace where they would give a screening specifically for, you know, or if you were in a press junket or something and you would fly away to someplace where everybody's got their laptop or tablet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then that'd be different. But, but I'm enjoying, though, I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm enjoying watching movies with criticism in mind.
Yeah, no, and kind of what I've started to do is, if I haven't seen the movie very recently, I will watch it, and then I will go back and rewatch it critically.
Exactly, yeah. If I've never seen it, I will watch it for the first time, just without any preconceptions, hopefully, just to kind of experience it. Although, again, I'm a little obsessive with stats and details, so, like, I watched The Frozen Ground for the first time, and I knew quite a bit about it.
Oh, is that the Hansen?
Yeah.
That's on my list. I haven't watched it yet.
You know what? It was because of where I work, and because a lot of the people that, I mean, I actually have like a written interview kind of with the mother of the kid who plays Hansen's son. So she got to see how the movie was made, you know, from that perspective. And there's a lot of involvement with the police department. And yet, the police department is actually, they're shown kind of as bumbling. So there was a little bit of reaction from some coworkers that it was kind of a negative reaction to the movie. Because it's not a great movie. But you know what? It's not a bad movie either. I think it's a solid movie.
Well, were the police really that? I mean, I realize I'm putting you on the spot, but my perception wasn't that they were bumbling. It's just that there was a very different time in forensics and law enforcement.
Well, yeah, and of course you have to look at it through the lens of, this is, you know, a movie is a story that somebody is telling. The director is telling a story, and while telling the story, it's not a documentary. You have heroes and villains, and you have a through line, and you've got characters that are supposed to take you places. And so they focus on, the main focus of the movie is really not on Nicolas Cage, who plays the detective, or John Cusack, who plays Hansen. It's Vanessa Hudgens, who plays this prostitute, who was a handsome victim that escaped. And so she is your character that guides you through the movie, and she's like the heroine pretty much with Nicolas Cage.
So she's the focal point of the story?
Yeah, yeah. The whole story is about her. And understanding that, you can understand that, okay, so there's some factual errors in the movie, and there's some continuity errors with regard to, like, there's some scenes shot in the hospital that's just clearly Providence Hospital today. You know, they may not have the flat screen monitors in frame, but all the other equipment is stuff that I'm very familiar with looking at.
Yeah.
And there's also some cars that you can see that are obviously, you know, like a Nissan Altima, or trucks that are definitely more recent models than 1983.
Yeah, but, well, I think it's hard to go back and eliminate everything, but I understand what you're saying. Things like that take me out of the movie.
Well, listen to our podcast about it, and I would highly recommend watching it, because knowing, you know, you probably remember going to Hanson's Bakery on the way to Nancy Lake.
I do.
Yeah. So we were alive during this. We were, you know, I wasn't in a position to be critical or even all that aware, other than, you know, hearing a little bit, you know, and watching.
Well, I remember people talking about it in a kind of a referentially kind of, this is a spooky, scary thing. But, you know, Grandpa took us to Daylight, was it Daylight Donuts, right?
I think it was just called Hanson's Bakery, wasn't it? Or was it Daylight Donuts? Yeah.
But I remember Grandpa Clyde taking us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and for several years in a row. That was just the stop on the way.
Exactly.
So, you know.
It was the routine.
Yeah. And, you know, again, there's a couple other people who I know that were in this movie. And so, you know, that I tried to not let that kind of flavor how I looked at the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, since the experience was universally positive, you know, that was fine. I mean, there really isn't anything negative that was said about it at all.
So, are we dead with Murder by Death now?
Yeah, I think so. I can't say enough good things about it. I mean, I'm gonna throw enough clips in it.
It's a movie, if you haven't seen it, you need to see it. And you need to see it a couple times because you'll get stuff that you didn't get the first time.
And especially if you like those, if you've seen those kind of movies or read those kind of books, you really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Because I can't remember. I've read all the Agatha Christie novels.
Yeah. Well, we have our mom to blame or to thank for that.
Yeah.
You know, all that, even Travis McGee and, you know, Clive Cussler and all those books were always around the house.
Oh, so tangentially, when I was there, incidentally, our mother and I, we watched the Shadow Recruit.
Oh, yeah, Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit.
Yeah.
And?
Not terrible, not great. I think I did mention it because I was incensed that, of course, Kevin Costner was in it.
Oh, I think you mentioned, yeah.
Yeah.
Did he play the...
The boss. He played the
James Earl Jones character?
Yes.
And
I don't think that was literally the character. I think he just was the recruiter boss man. So I don't think he was literally the James Earl Jones character in this, but he was just the boss. And so in retrospect, having watched that in comparison to the Bourne movies, I like the Bourne movies better.
Yeah, well, and I, you know, the Bourne movies were okay. The Bourne books were great. And did you read all the
Bourne
books?
I really dug the Bourne movies, so.
Oh, no, the Bourne movies are good, but it's so funny because I really was happy and a little bit worried when they made the Bourne movies because I have so much love for the books. It's kind of like I don't want to watch Sahara because I've heard it's not that great. And it's Clive Cussler's book, you know, with Dirk Pitt. And I so like that character that I don't want to have it ruined.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah. Which, you know, I mean, they already had Raise the Titanic as the movie, but I don't know.
Oh, but that was a terrible movie.
Not a great movie, no.
No, it wasn't even
the best of the Clive Cussler or Dirk Pitt books.
Oh, it's a terrible movie. Anyway. So, what do we want to do next week?
I've got a thought. Okay. What do you feel about The Talented Mr. Ripley?
Is that Matt Damon?
Uh-huh. And Jude Law.
I've never seen it.
Well, it's streaming.
It's on Netflix?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's Netflix streaming.
All right, I can do that.
It's, you know, it's a thriller. How about this? Do you think you can watch it in the next couple of days? No rush. If you can't, that's fine.
I usually watch it on the weekends. Why?
Well, no, I guess actually it doesn't, because I'm going to have stuff to talk about. So either way, I was going to say, because if, you know, you certainly have veto power if you watch it and decide, oh no, I don't want to talk about this movie. This is crap.
Oh no, I'm happy to talk about a movie if it's crap. I think we've already covered that ground.
Okay. It's true.
And I won't remember the name of that horrible movie.
Source code. Oh, Primer.
Source Code. Primer, yeah.
Yeah.
No, Source Code, yes. No, I'm happy to talk about how bad Source Code is anytime.
Yeah.
and I want to point out you broke your streak because you didn't mention 2001 in the last podcast.
Oh, darn it. Well.
So, Sorry. The curse is broken.
No, I don't know. I still, you know, it's funny. Now I think it in movies is in terms of Nightbreed, 2001, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, of course you do.
You've been listening to Not in a Creepy Way. If you have a rant or rave, please send your emails to rants@notincreepyway.com.
Like us on Facebook. Give us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave a comment. Turns out you can leave a 5-star rating and the comment could say your show sucks. And it still makes us happy.
Not in a creepy way.